Welcome to All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. Every January, economist Bill Lafayette predicts the likely economic outlook for Central Ohio. His forecasts over the years reflect the ups and downs of inflation, unemployment, and global pressure points. And his assessment for 2025 was not so rosy. Joining us now is Bill Lafayette, founder and owner of Regionomics, a Columbus-based economic and workforce strategy firm. Welcome back to All Sides, Bill.
Thank you, Amy. Nice to be here.
So you've been making this annual forecast for 26 years. What is the long view for Central Ohio's economy?
Well, the long view is that we generally are doing very, very well. We've just hit the kind of temporary hiccup that we do hit from time to time.
And in your remarks, you spoke last week before the Columbus Metropolitan Club, and you apologized for a not too cheerful assessment for 2025. Can you define that not too cheerful?
Well, my prediction for 2025 is that we're going to see net job gains this year of 4,500 jobs, and that's in a 1.16 million job economy. So we'll get growth, if I'm right, of 0.4%. The national economists are predicting something like 1% for U.S. employment.
So, 4,500 jobs, that does seem pretty small. 0.4% of growth, that seems pretty measly for Columbus. Is supposed to be, the Columbus MSA, the metropolitan area of Columbus, is supposed to be one of the fastest growing places in the country.
And it is, population-wise, certainly. And as I say, generally, our economy does really well. It's a very diverse economy. It's not really focused too heavily on one sector, including government, surprisingly enough. During the expansion before the COVID recession, we wound up with 23% total job growth compared to the 17% national average and Ohio's 12%.
So what were the efforts? Why was that so low compared to the national average and even Ohio's average?
You mean this year?
Just overall, whenever you're looking back, why is Columbus not the same as the national average or the Ohio average?
Well, as I say, we generally do much better simply because we're invested broadly in many different sectors, like a diversified stock portfolio. And the sectors that we are concentrated in generally do pretty well. Mm-hmm. Things like business services and financial services and distribution, sectors like that.
Well, how have efforts more recently to combat inflation, how has that slowed economic growth and employment growth?
Well, it's slowed economic growth nationwide, although economists have been repeatedly surprised at how well growth has held up despite the efforts of the Federal Reserve to tamp down inflation, which have largely succeeded. We're in a much better place right now than what economists were expecting a year ago.
So, and that relates to the high interest rates everyone's been dealing with. So have people just been continuing on with their lives, moving on and dealing with having high interest rates?
Well, it certainly has affected home buying. It's affected purchases of big ticket items, just not quite as much as what economists typically see. Probably because household balance sheets held up so well given all the stimulus that they got during the pandemic.
So we have also lost jobs. It might not be at the level reflected in the preliminary results of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which showed about 24,000 jobs lost over the last 6 months. Did you have to make adjustments for that? What are you showing about jobs lost recently?
Well, I did. The numbers that come out from the Bureau of Labor Statistics monthly are preliminary. They're based on a really, really limited sample. And so they're corrected a couple times in the years after they're issued. And part of my forecast involves guessing where the misestimates were and adjusting the numbers accordingly. This year, the misestimates seem to be mostly on the low side, that employment growth was better than what the Bureau was saying. The Bureau said that we gained barely 0.3%. I'm saying we gained 0.5,
Okay.
which is still not great, but it's better.
Okay. And you spent some time talking about a job mismatch. So we have people in the workforce, but when you talk about a mismatch, do you mean that the people who are available and looking for work don't have the skills for the jobs that are open? Is that what you mean?
That is what I mean. We don't know the characteristics of the people who are actively looking for jobs, but we do know the characteristics of the jobs that are being offered. There are a large number of jobs in healthcare, in sales, in management positions, in business operations. Curiously, almost 30% of the jobs that are open are jobs that pay six figures. And that compares to about 15% of all the jobs that we currently have.
Okay, so but you said you don't know the who's looking for work. So you're saying that there are not people with the right skills for these six-figure jobs out there to fill them. Is that right?
Six-figure jobs, the healthcare jobs, the other sectors that are begging for workers, truck drivers, for example,
I
nurses.
yeah, I could see people who are listening right now saying, "I'll take that job." But then you're saying they don't have the skills that meet the requirements. So, when you look at a pie chart that breaks down this region's employment sectors, we have a lot of people who work in government, business, and education. I mean, that makes sense. This is Columbus. We are the capital. We have Ohio State University. We have lots of universities. So, government, business, and education, those are the largest slices of the pie. That seems positive to me, like good slices of pie to have to be big. Does that help with the economy, or are that is it not?
Oh, it certainly does. Over the long run, that's been a big, big reason why we've grown so nicely. Transportation is smaller, but over the last 30, 35 years, it's gone from below average to way, way above average. And as we rely more and more and more on online buying, that's over the long run very positive for us. It's just not terribly positive at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I'm surprised what you said before about, these jobs being open in healthcare and sales and business operations and they're higher paying jobs, because when you hear news stories about the economy, they're always saying they're looking for plumbers and electricians and construction workers, and it makes me feel like that there's a mismatch there.
And certainly the trades are very important. And as I say in the report, construction is one of the sectors that's one of the two sectors that's been doing really well, and I expect to do really well next year.
Yet you noted that the construction sector is a bright spot, and you predict it will continue to be. Central Ohio is building. We're building a lot of things, hospitals, houses. I mean, everywhere you look, we're building things. Do we have enough workers to keep building?
That's construction is not one of the sectors that's really, really begging at this point, but those jobs are certainly there. They're certainly available, and we need all the construction workers we can get.
It could, I mean, couldn't we build faster if we had more construction workers? Or is it a case of management of them too, training, you know, that all takes time?
If you could wave a magic wand and create more construction workers, I'm sure they would get employed pretty quickly.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Bill Lafayette, the founder and owner of Regionomics, a Columbus-based economic and workforce strategy firm. And Bill is telling us about his forecast for 2025, the outlook for the economy for this year. So, talking about we mentioned the skills mismatch. You know, more employers are posting jobs that are not being filled. And can you give us some examples, another example of how it's playing out locally? You told us about, you know, healthcare and sales and business operations, construction. Does it play out in a lot of industries where it's just the workers don't have exactly what is needed?
Yeah, that's largely the problem. And it's a question, I think, of working with people who are looking for jobs, helping them think about skills that they have that they may not be thinking about themselves. A couple years ago, I did a big study in South Columbus. In the economically challenged neighborhoods there, thinking about the folks who have high school diplomas and are working in low-wage jobs, say in restaurants and retail and so forth, and thinking about how we match those folks with higher-wage jobs that exist in South Columbus, manufacturing and insurance and healthcare. And there were a bunch of jobs and a bunch of openings that even in a sector like insurance that you wouldn't think would be open to folks with just a high school diploma, that are available and with a little bit of training. These folks could access it. I think it would be really great if we could take something like that and apply it region-wide.
Yeah, I know that Columbus State is working with business leaders to try to align the employer needs with what they're teaching, even at Columbus State.
Critically important, and they're doing a swell job, they really are.
And before we take the break, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Trump administration coming in. There's all that talk of plans to raise tariffs. He always mentions China and Canada and Mexico. Do you have worries that that's going to impact the Central Ohio economy over this year? I mean, you made predictions for 2025, but we're going to have a big change come, you know, with the new administration.
Well, that's one of the big uncertainties with this forecast in particular, because we don't know what the tariffs are going to look like. We don't know when they'll hit. We don't know if they'll hit. If they do hit, it could be bad for Ohio's economy, bad for Central Ohio's economy, because, well, for two reasons. The country affected by the tariff doesn't pay the tariff. we pay the tariff. Businesses may eat part of it, lower their profits, or to the extent that they can, they might pass it on to their consumers. And so prices would increase again. They would kind of gap upward. But so there's that problem. That would lower economic growth. But then countries on which a tariff's imposed don't necessarily just sit back and take it. They impose a tariff on us. The last time this happened, during the first Trump administration, the exports of soybeans from Ohio to China declined precipitously, and they went looking for other sources and they found them in South America. And I have no idea whether we've gained that market back or not.
And then, and one other thing that is still remains kind of like an X factor that we don't know are is the Trump administration coming in and all the talk about deporting immigrants. That worries you as well. So that's another thing that you don't know. With the undocumented workers that we have working in farming or restaurants and those kind of, what do you worry about with that?
Well, that those are jobs that are filled now. Like it or not, we have lots of undocumented workers working in a bunch of different industries. You pull those workers out and you increase the number of job openings that domestic workers aren't necessarily interested in filling. And the last time this happened in the South, fruit rotted in the trees, tomatoes rotted in the fields because there was no one to pick it. Losses stretched into the billions.
Yeah, and it's not even a skills mismatch. It's more that people don't want those jobs. Is that right?
Correct.
Well, we're going to continue to talk about the outlook for the Central Ohio economy and coming up, why economic opportunity and prosperity is out of reach for so many people of color and what to do about that. That's when All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. It's called economic inclusion, and it refers to the ability to extend opportunity and prosperity to all, especially those who have been historically underserved. Central Ohio is trailing other metropolitan areas in this regard. In fact, it comes in dead last when compared to 54 of the country's largest metro areas. Still with us to discuss his study of this issue is Bill Lafayette, the owner of Regionomics. Thanks again for being here, Bill.
Thank you, Amy.
And joining us now is Stephanie Hightower, president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League, who commissioned Bill to do the study. Welcome to All Sides, Stephanie.
Thank you.
So, Bill, let's start first with that statistic. Central Ohio is trailing 54 of the country's largest metro areas when it comes to this. Why is Central Ohio doing so poorly?
We simply aren't passing the gains that we've achieved, that we've talked about. We aren't passing those out to populations of color. To the same extent that other regions are. There's no region that's perfect. It's just that we're not doing nearly as well as every place else.
And Stephanie, you commissioned the study. Were the findings surprising to you, or did it confirm something you already knew?
You know, Amy, it confirmed what we already knew. We know that data is really important. Mm-hmm. And in order for you to hear or people to hear what you're talking about, we needed to have the data confirmed. And so that's what Bill did. And what it's done now is it's brought to the forefront information, especially to our business community, to the education community, where we're falling short, and then what the pathway is going to need to be to move forward.
Columbus is one of the fastest growing areas in the country. We always tout that. I can imagine that city leaders would not like to hear that they're down at the bottom amongst 54 other regions.
Well, yeah, it's embarrassing, quite frankly. And so, you know, now that we have this document and we have the information and the data, it's incumbent upon us to now look at what do we need to do in order to make a change. How do we move from being 54th on the list?
Bill, you based your findings on 5 measurements. It looked at employment, earnings, poverty disparities between Black and non-Hispanic whites in Central Ohio. How did you come up with what you were going to look at to make these measurements?
Well, primarily I based my work on what's called the Metro Monitor that the Brookings Institution brings out every year, every couple years. And they do a whole bunch of analysis on how metros stack up against one another. That was my primary source. And then I supplemented that with a couple sources that I pulled myself from the Census Bureau's work.
And when we came in with below, with 54 above us, are we talking like Cleveland, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, the cities we always compare ourselves to?
Yes. And actually, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh aren't doing a whole lot better than we are.
Is that supposed to make me feel better?
No, it's supposed to make them feel worse, I'm afraid.
So Bill, one of your recommendations is to better prepare and educate young people, especially minority youth, for the work world. How would you do that?
Well, there are a whole range of skills that a worker needs to succeed in the workforce. I call those work-ready skills. Some people call them soft skills, although I don't like that term. Things like leadership, effective oral and written communication, teamwork, punctuality, responsibility to your goals and objectives, effectively managing yourself and others, leadership qualities, things like that. And I argue that our K through 12 system needs to emphasize those skills. And the reason why I bring that up as so important is that I've done focus groups with CEOs now for the last 20 years or so. And almost to a person, they tell me that these work-ready skills are as important as the technical skills that you would expect them to want folks to have.
Stephanie, from your vantage point, what is the Columbus Urban League already doing to make sure that these high school graduates have the skills that Bill just mentioned?
Well, one of the things we have now, Franklin County, the Franklin County Commissioners have funded a year-round program called Workforce Readiness Training University. And as a part of that, young people have an opportunity to work year-round, to earn wages, but they're doing a lot of what Bill talked about. It's connecting them to the jobs of the future. It's getting them those skills that they need, those communication skills, entrepreneurial skills, access to different technology. Like some people, we would love to have them come and listen and sit in your seat one day so that they can see. And so what we've been doing is basically putting together what we call a Career Connect Hub. And this also applies to adults. What people don't understand is that most of these future jobs, most people don't have a clue what those jobs are. We did a survey late last year. About 3,500 people responded, which was great. Six out of 10 of those people were women. And these were women and men who are already working. They've heard about Intel. They've heard about Amgen. They've heard about these $100,000 jobs. They don't know how to access them. They need to be upskilled, right? These are working people who need to be upskilled. But how are we getting those people ready for those jobs? That's where the Columbus Urban League, we are now going out and seeking sponsorship and funding so that we can put that Career Connect Hub together for those people so that they can explore, so that we can then explain what those jobs of the future are. We can then do assessments. Then we can get them in maybe apprenticeship programs, two-year programs, so that they can upskill. Then we're also doing the same thing in the schools and with our 14 to 21-year-olds. Again, we have to connect them to those jobs of the future. We're now looking at putting in a technology lab, an esports lab, so that we can...
Into a high school, you mean?
In one of our facilities.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because one of the things we know is that our public education system, they don't have the same... They don't have counseling like they used to, which is a missing piece. So our young people are basically going to school. They're studying for tests and getting ready for tests. But nobody's really taking the time to explore the career opportunities for them or entrepreneurial opportunities. That's what we're doing with our Workforce Readiness Training University.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, you know, based on what Bill said and looking at his study, We could blame the schools. They're not doing enough. Do you feel like that's too much pressure on the schools, or are they to blame?
I don't think the schools are to blame. Mm-hmm. Now, when we have school boards that aren't operating effectively, so that a mm-hmm. superintendent can actually do their jobs, that's a whole nother issue. I think, you know, schools and what they have to do and where they need to be. I think we have a great superintendent here in Columbus who can get us there. It's the additional time after schools that we need to start looking at making investments in. And those things that we're doing at the Columbus Urban League for our young people are not going to be the same opportunities that are going to be afforded to them in the school systems. So apprenticeship programs would be one of those. Or if a young person wants to go and learn HVAC, we put them and we pair them with an employer that is going to get them ready to, you know, to become an HVAC person, because they may not be going off to college. And we know a lot of our young people today don't want the debt in college. And so how do we get them in apprenticeship programs? How do we help them to build their entrepreneurial spirit? So if they want to start their own businesses, those are the things that are not happening in the school systems.
I can imagine, though, that it's a heavy lift to convince a 16-year-old that they need to start thinking about their future HVAC job.
Well, but you know what I have to say? Amy, we had a program this summer, our Workforce Readiness Summer Work Employment Program. We paired a 16-year-old up with the HVAC company. Mm-hmm. And so they have now hired him full-time, part-time. He is now learning the trade. He knows that he was not going to college. His mother is so proud of him, and she's excited that this is also an additional income stream that's coming into their households. So believe it or not, our young people are interested at 16 and 17-year-old if they're exposed to the opportunity. The problem is we have to expose them to the opportunities that exist.
And everyone's house has a furnace that needs to work, or you need a furnace, air conditioner. I mean, it needs to work, and you need people to fix it.
Absolutely, and that's what I tell the young people all the time. You know, these are people who are making, you know, $100,000, $200,000 a year. I hate when I have to call one of those folks because I know what it's going to cost me, an electrician or an HVAC person, to come in if they're charging me $100 an hour to come and get and fix something.
Bill, did you want to add something?
Yeah, that is unbelievably important. And I was just thrilled to read about everything that the Urban League's doing. Equally important, we need businesses to step up and offer career-focused internships. The people may be working in offices, and they could expose 16, 17-year-olds to what goes on in an office. I have an intern right now who's a junior in economics at Wright State, where I got my bachelor's and master's. And he is learning the ins and outs of local area economic analysis, which they don't teach in an econ program generally. So the whole spectrum is important.
Bill, what would you say would happen if Central Ohio was able to turn the tables, turn this around, go from worst to first? What would our economic picture look like if you, whenever you do your analysis for a future year?
Well, I did a little kind of toy experiment where I looked at what might happen. And it turned out that our job growth over the next 10 years would double. Our GDP growth, gross domestic product growth, would more than double. We would gain tremendously in wealth. And that would attract more people to Central Ohio. It would increase the prosperity of our entire region. So there are a few things we can do that are more important than this, it seems to me.
And Stephanie, you've talked about your work readiness training. The inaugural class had 27 youth in it, and the fellows get paid. There were sponsors from Honda and Capital One, Cover My Meds, AT&T. Can you tell us more about that program?
All right, so
That's different.
there were
Okay.
27 fellows.
Okay, the fellowship is
That's
different.
a
Yeah.
different, but we had over 500 young people that we had for the summer, and
Okay,
our
so
waiting
two
list.
different is a different programs. I'm
Yes,
sorry,
so
I'm mixing them up.
yes, so the fellows are year round, and they have to apply for those jobs. But we have dollars from the county where we can bring in what we had dollars for 400, but we ended up with 500.
Okay.
And our list is there's over 1,000 youth that now want to get in the program. So we know the program works. We know that what we're doing is something that parents want to get their kids engaged in. And I think Bill is absolutely right. One of the things that we're trying to do now, we need employers, we need businesses, we need them to take on interns for the summer so that when we can fill these positions with young people. If we don't have businesses for them to go to, then we cannot bring them in. So there is a need, and this is the thing that people need to also know. These jobs for these young people for the summer, this is supplemental income for families. And so it's not only about them learning and exploring during these internships, but they're also building wealth in their households. And what this also does is encourages those parents who may not be working. Now they then come to the Columbus Urban League and they see what's happening with their children, and they want us to help them with the same opportunities. And so it's having that kind of ripple effect that is really transformative as we when we're doing this work.
So you worked with 500 youth. Did you have trouble finding placements for all of them? Did you have enough companies that wanted to work with you on this?
No, we did not. And so that's where we had to double up in a lot of places. So that's what we're doing now is we're exploring who, and this is not just big businesses. We want small businesses. We want medium-sized businesses. And we need all different industry areas to come on board, because our young people have different things that they think they want to get into. This gives them the opportunity. If you want to be in retail, if you want to be in healthcare, if you want to be in manufacturing. We're working with Columbus State right now. They're bringing their manufacturing classes over to our facility. Again, it's exposing our young people to possibilities of the future. And that's what this really is about. And I think your earlier question, why are minorities not engaged in these fields? Because they don't have the exposure. They don't have the opportunity to go and see what is going on. And if we can provide more of those opportunities, I think to Bill's point, we can begin to close that gap where people are not in those jobs, that we can fill those jobs with people of color or those that have been underrepresented in the past.
Do you have people who work for you who cold call businesses and say, will you take on one of these students?
Absolutely. And we, what we also do is we're trying to bring all of those industry areas together. And so that we're having, we don't want to just cold call, but we need to come and people need to come to our place. They need to see our kids in action. They need to know what we're doing. And then that motivates them to say, all right, can I take two? Or they can go back to their HR directors and they can say, okay, how can we build out a program in our company internally so that we can have interns?
If someone's listening right now and they want to be a part of this, can they just contact the Columbus Urban League?
Yes, yeah. They should ask for Charity Martin King, who is our vice president over our youth leadership development programs. And they can call 257-6300, 614-257-6300, and we will definitely get them connected.
All right, we're going to continue to talk about the economic outlook for Central Ohio this year and beyond. Still with us for our next segment is Bill Lafayette, the founder and owner of Regionomics, and Stephanie Hightower, president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League. We'll be back in just a moment on 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Every January, economist Bill Lafayette predicts the economic outlook for Central Ohio. His forecasts over the years reflect the ups and downs of inflation, unemployment, and global pressure points. We've been talking about the ups and downs in his outlook for 2025. We're also discussing economic inclusion, the ability to extend opportunity and prosperity to all, especially those who have been historically underserved. Still with us is Bill Lafayette, the founder and owner of Regionomics, a Columbus-based economic and workforce strategy firm. Thanks again for being here, Bill.
Thank you, Amy.
And Stephanie Hightower, president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League. Thank you again for being here, Stephanie.
Thank you.
So, Stephanie, you have said that you want to just wrap your arms around our young people and help them figure out what they want to do and what they need. Is that the key to what you're working on? You want to just reach out and say, I can help you. Let's get there together.
Well, we want to do that for all individuals who have been underserved and underrepresented. That's what the Columbus Urban League is all about. But in particular, our youth, we think that next generation of leadership is really important. And we think we've devised a program that we know is really making the difference and is really transformative in youth lives. And what we're also doing is they're also getting paid to do it. And I think that's an incentive, too, for our young people, just like we do apprenticeship programs where people are actually paid while they're going to work. This is the same opportunity that we're providing for our young people ages 14 to 21. We've had to stretch it to 21. And when we do our internship programs for the summer, the 14 and 15-year-olds do work-based training. Mm-hmm. So they're not ready to go out yet. Mm-hmm. So we want to get them ready before we send them out to businesses. We then send our 16 through 21-year-olds out, and then they get that firsthand experience from employers.
Okay. And for youth to sign up for this, are you in high schools recruiting, or do they find you?
No, it's a combination of both, but we're trying to hit all of the school districts in Franklin County. Mm-hmm. We will be meeting with all of the superintendents. They will be receiving a letter to come and learn more about the program, and we would like for them to refer those young people who have an interest. So that's what our goal is, to all of the districts in Franklin County have the opportunity to participate, because this is a support grant from Franklin County.
Yeah, I mean, the superintendents is one way to go, but I almost feel like you need to get all the school counselors together.
Well, we're going to meet with the soups first to say, who do you want to come in and be your representative? Mm-hmm. And then once they identify that person, then we will Our folks will then work with whoever that is. But again, this is about learning more about the program.
Yeah.
So we've got to first, again, educate them, show them what we're doing, how we are supplementing the work that they're doing. Because what we don't want to do is we want to make sure that our school districts are our partners.
Right.
And so if there are ways that we can supplement the curriculums and the things that they're doing already, that's what our program is all about.
And Bill, when you talk about how we improve, you've said that leaders need a bold plan, and you talk about making this a community-wide priority. Do you think the mayor and city council are listening to you?
Well, I hope so. I guess we'll find out, but I would imagine they are. I hope they are.
And is this something, have you heard from, you said you're working with Franklin County on this grant. Have you heard from the mayor, city council?
I have heard from someone in the mayor's office who basically has said, after they heard Bill's report, and know that we want to put together a task force to look at this, that they would be interested in helping to sponsor and to build some support into us getting this task force. Because it is going to take... It's going to take all of the community to mm-hmm. collaborate on this. And so this is not just an Urban League project, but we want those collaborators to come to the table, not being, I don't want to use the right word.
Feeling like they're backed in a corner.
Exactly. Yeah. We want them to come in. And this is not for people to be self-serving. We all have different strengths. We all have different skill sets that we mm-hmm. offer. We know that we're that trusted partner for underrepresented folks in this community. And we have people with lived experiences and professionals who understand those communities. And so that would be the strength of the Urban League. Then there could be the strength of another partner that they have the technical support and skills to bring to the table. So what we've got to do is put that small workforce task group together and then build out an ecosystem that's going to address a lot of the things that Bill has talked about in his report.
Ohio has been called the Silicon Valley of the Heartland. We've seen rapid growth in artificial intelligence. Bill, you've said that AI holds great promise and it'll help with worker productivity and output. It adds to the GDP growth and corporate growth. So AI is a good thing for the future of Central Ohio?
Yes, it certainly is. There's a lot of fear out there that folks will lose their jobs, will be replaced by AI. The analysis these days suggests that there's a whole lot of less of that that's going to happen, and a whole lot more of workers who will be assisted by AI, and some of the less well-performing workers will find their productivity increasing a lot. And that's a very, very hopeful thing, but it requires everybody to keep their training up to date. And that's one important point I wanted to make, that you can't just graduate from college, go into a job, and figure you're done with learning. More than ever, you've got to focus on continuing to improve your skills.
Yeah, and earlier in our conversation, Stephanie, you mentioned that 20 years ago we couldn't predict what jobs were going to be needed. I mean, that seems like the same thing. You know, if you asked me 5 years ago, I would give you a completely different answer about what AI means for Central Ohio. Mm-hmm. So is that you're incorporating these continuously changing skills into your program?
Absolutely. And we're also looking at what are those industry areas that really, really have a lot of room to grow, where we have, or they're missing skilled workers to get into those areas. And so we know the healthcare industry right now needs a lot of workers, but again, what are those skill sets that people need? And folks just really don't know. So they're working low wage jobs. They're barely making whatever it is they need to make in order to maintain their households. But the good thing is they have a desire to upskill. So how do we get those people educated about what those opportunities are? and then put them in either two-year apprenticeship programs or something so that they can then upskill to really upskill what they need in order to get into these jobs of the future. No one knows, you know, right now when you go out to Amgen and you see the mm-hmm. people with the white bunny suits on. And mm-hmm. I mean, we have to take people out there so they can see, do I want to do this? Is this something that I would want to be, that I would be interested in? You know, people talk about up at Honda, you know, they had to wear, you know, the jumpsuits for all those years. You just didn't come in your jeans yeah. and your tennis shoes. So you have to, we have to expose people to these workforce opportunities, to what they would actually be doing, and then give people choices, as you talked about earlier. You know, if in fact we look at immigration and migrant workers are no longer available in this country, do we know other people who might want to go into roofing? Do we know if folks want to go into, you know, some of those other trades? Those are the things we have to start looking at in not only Ohio, but across this country.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a whole group of students who had never considered construction work as a job just because maybe no one in their family does that.
That's exactly right. And we know that underrepresented people in the past, they were not given those opportunities mm-hmm. to go into the trades. Now there are those opportunities for them to get into the trades. But again, that's also, we have to work with those trades, because if we are bringing in women and people of color, right, those environments now have to adapt to the new folks that are coming in to these industry areas.
And Stephanie, at the recent Columbus Metropolitan Club event where all of this was talked about, one of the speakers made an analogy about broadband access and how not everyone shares in it equally. There are still parts of Ohio that don't have high-speed internet. I mean, AI is a potential tool to help with this, but do you have concerns about that, the inequity in, you know, in the internet not being seen as a utility?
Absolutely. And we know, again, that's one of the reasons why a lot of our young people, you know, if we had it our way, Amy, we would have that building open 24/7 mm-hmm. because it would give those young people and their families access, exactly to what you said, technology. We're going to be meeting down, going down south to the Appalachian Foundation in a couple of weeks to talk to those folks down there that they don't have access as well. So how can we get together and really look and talk to our state legislators to say, hey, it's not only hurting the inner city folks, but you still also have that gap when you start looking at Appalachia, Ohio. Mm-hmm. How can we come together and look at, from a policy standpoint, putting things in place that are going to benefit the entire state? And so this isn't about urban versus suburban versus rural. It's everybody's going to have access to that broadband so that they can actually do the work of the future.
And you talked about getting these students into internships and fellowships. But according to the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce, there's approximately 870,000 working age adults who don't have a high school diploma. I mean, how do we address that? Because some of these jobs, they won't or they can't take you if you don't have a high school diploma.
Well, again, and that's that might be a little bit out of my depth and range,
yeah.
right? And that is an issue and a problem. But we also know if we can get them their GED, we can get them then in a two-year program. We have we work a lot with folks who are reentry individuals, and a lot of them come out and don't have their high school diplomas. So we help to get them into those kinds of programs so that they can get their GET, and then we get them in apprenticeship programs, or then we say, hey, you want to be an entrepreneur, let's help you start your own business, because we know then that might be, those are two pathways that can help those people who are coming out of prison and back into society. Same thing is happening with our kids. We have a lot of our young people. Once they get into our program, their grades improve because they know what they now have to do. And now they have a focus and they have a motivation, but we've got to give all of them. And they have hope. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, that most of the time our young people don't have hope. And so they don't have the interest in going into and looking at career opportunities of the future.
And Bill, we have just about a minute left, but could you talk a little bit about that? If they're, you know, employers looking for these workers, but and the gap in the need for the high school diploma, the need for that to, you know, the to round that out.
We do have a lower than average number of folks who don't have a high school diploma, But it is unbelievably important that we get all of them to get their GEDs, because jobs for folks without a high school diploma are low paying, dead end, few and declining.
Well, we have been talking about the Central Ohio economy, and even though Bill Lafayette's outlook was not so rosy, we're going to continue the conversation. We'll see where it goes from here. Bill Lafayette, the founder and owner of Regionomics, a Columbus-based economic and workforce strategy firm. Bill, thanks for being with us this hour.
Thanks so much, Amy.
And Stephanie Hightower, president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Bill.
And thank you for listening to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News.